necessity.
Yeah, that's Kitty got a hairball. We're the Freedom Fiends, and that's the real lyrics to that song. I'm gonna practice. I forgot how to sing, but yeah, that was the lyrics a long time ago, and it's not a suicidal iteration or ideation by having that line. Maybe I'll be happy if I kill myself. That song was completely sarcastic and ironic, and I wrote it in a more turbulent time in my life, and things are better now. So I'm Michael Dean. I'm Michael Dean. I am the Iron Hamster. Let's have our co-hosts, Diana Kyler. Who are you?
I am the Laughing Kitty.
And MK Lords. What are you?
I'm the Wolfram Panther.
Yeah. You know, there's a...
The what? The what panther?
Wolfram. It means tungsten.
Wolfram.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we used a... A picture the other day of some guy, and we took some hair metal band and put some pictures on, we put his face over over a hair metal band's picture. And it was actually a real hair metal band. Davy Barker found it. And I asked him, I said, what's the name of that band? And he said, they're called Steel Panther. And I said, that sounds like a Freedom Fiends co-host, man.
It does, yeah.
Yep.
Sounds going to be the Steel Panther.
They're actually a joke. They're kind of like Spinal Tap. They're like a real band that's current and kind of a takeoff on hair metal. But man.
So they're kind of making fun of it while they're
rocking it. They're rocking out with their socks out. So today's episode is called "Those Who Do Not Remember the Past Are Condemned to Repeat It, Part 2." I'm not going to say part two of two. This might become a 20-part series. I'm not really sure. And it's an extension of our show from Monday night. The three of us did "Those Who Do Not Remember the Past Are Condemned to Repeat It, Part 1." And basically, it's about people falling for mind control of great men, of cult-like people. It can be women, great men. And we use the word great. Not in the sense of we think they're great, but in the sense of people think they're great and follow their every word, even to the grave. And the main person we were talking about before was Jim Jones of the Jonestown cult, who got a bunch of people to kill themselves. And it wasn't really a mass suicide. I want to repeat that. It was a mass murder. A lot of people who didn't want to, quote unquote, drink the Kool-Aid were forced to, or were injected with the poison, or were shot.
Well, we may never know. We may never know which people, voluntarily did it and which were forced. But I'm sure a great deal of them were forced.
Yeah. Well, one lady was hiding under the bed and got away. And
She speaks
of it. It was not voluntary. No. The quote, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it," is from the poet George Satayana. Is that how you say it? You cats know?
Satayana.
And it's a great quote. And those who cannot remember the past, it was actually "those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." But the variation of it, "those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it," which basically means the same thing, is what Jim Jones had written on a sign above his simple wooden throne in the pavilion in Jonestown. And it's really ironic that he had that because, it kind of seems like a cautionary example ahead of time. But I think he knew what he was doing. So... I think that thing was sad.
Very sad.
I remember it.
Yeah, I do too.
MK doesn't remember it.
No.
It was in...
MK, were you born?
In 1978.
No, that was a little before my time.
Yeah, Diana and I were about 14 and remember it as nationwide shocking news that everyone was talking about.
Yeah, I remember that specific scene that they show. you know, the aerial shot of all the people who are dead laying around the pavilion and just being like, what are those people dead or what? You know, it was just, it blew my mind.
You laughed. You laughed a little bit.
No, I didn't laugh.
You laughed only because, and I'd say too soon, but no, it's laughter is, I've heard things about the theory of comedy and basically and like why people laugh. Like it's not really known why people laugh. It's not, it doesn't seem like a necessary mechanism that would have evolved, but people generally, there is a theory that all humor is laughing at death. And a lot of jokes are about death in one way or another. And a lot of jokes boil down to directly or indirectly laughing at the fact that we'll all die someday. And I think laughing is a natural response to death. I think that procreation is a natural response to death. After wars or natural disasters, you know, a lot more, 9 months later, there's a lot more babies born than usual. And, you know, I mean, I've heard of people getting turned on by car crashes or by, you know, near death.
There's a movie about it.
Oh yeah. Crash. Near death experiences. It's an innate desire to repopulate the earth. And, it's not that inappropriate to laugh at something that happened in 1978. That was horrific, I think.
Yeah. Well, okay. So yeah, I'm laughing now. I didn't laugh then.
No.
Yeah.
We also didn't laugh then because, I mean, that was back when the only news we had was what, you know, the government, the mainstream media wanted us to think.
Right.
I mean, now if that happened, you know, the lady hiding under the bed would have been live tweeting it. I don't know if
the government conspiracy charge would have come out a lot sooner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's another thing we didn't talk a lot about before was the CIA theory involved in this. Anybody want to lay it out?
I have something to add to what we talked about a little bit.
Well, let me lay it out. Let me not bury the lead here. Okay, there is a conspiracy theory that Jim Jones and what happened in Guyana. Guyana's in Africa. Guyana's in South America. Guyana's the only English-speaking country in South America, which is one of the reasons he went there. And he was a Marxist, which is often forgotten by history. And he was friends with a lot of San Francisco and California politicians, especially because he could motivate about 10,000 registered voters for anything they wanted. And he was appointed to the city count, the Board of Housing of San Francisco. I mean, the guy had power and he had, you know, hundreds of people. He wasn't one of these, like, you know, libertarian philosopher cult leaders that gets people to tithe or give a little bit of their money. I mean, this was a guy who like got people to sign over their property and their life savings. Mm-hmm. And, he was a multi-millionaire with a lot of political power. And, you know, he basically went to Guyana because he got run out of the United States because people were starting to write a lot of articles about him. You know, there's actually some libertarian that wants to build a paradise in South America. Maybe he could get together with that philosopher and they could have their own little like libertarian type Jonestown. You know, the Marxism was the problem. If we make it libertarian, it'll work. Won't we?
That's right. Yeah.
Drink my Kool-Aid. Yeah.
It's organic Kool-Aid.
It's organic Kool-Aid. It's unpasteurized.
It's local, locally sourced Kool-Aid.
Yeah. And, you know, who knows? It was actually Kool-Aid. It was like flavored grape drink, or purple, you know. There were news crews that went through there before. Photographs were taken where they had stockpiled both Kool-Aid and some off-brand type Kool-Aid. But, you know, the phrase drink the Kool-Aid was actually first popularized by Arianna Huffington against people who still believed in Reaganomics after Reagan. And it's kind of ironic because, you know, she was saying like right wingers drink the Kool-Aid, you know, drink the hook, line and sinker of what stupid right wingers say. But actually, like, Jim Jones was a hardcore leftist Marxist communist, and, you know, not in the way Obama is. Like, Obama is kind of like, he's kind of socialist, but he's kind of in bed with the big banks and he's kind of fascist at the same time, and his feet stink and but he denies being a socialist. I mean, Jim Jones was like, you know, I love, he was quoted, he said, I love the idea of Marx had it right, blah blah blah. Jim Jones was claimed to be a Christian cult leader that was, you know, people said he's perverting the Bible, but Jim Jones
he totally did.
He was actually atheist or agnostic. I mean, he was basically using the opiate of religion on the masses to bring him the opiate of, I'm perverting
socialism.
Marx, but yeah.
He was
a Marxist who wanted to propagate Marxism and wrapped it in religion. So,
and he even went so far as to say, you know, you could see Christ in him. You could see God in him.
He called himself God.
He's one of the only people of note that has actually ever claimed to be both Jesus and Buddha. That's a rare combination.
Oh, wait, and Allah. I think in one of the YouTube videos that I watched about him, that he actually claimed he was talking about Muslims, and he actually claimed that he was Allah.
Yeah, he was probably trying to. I think that's what got him in hot water with the black Muslim, the Nation of Islam. They didn't like him very much. He was a competitor, and Jim Jones was actually part black, though. Not a lot of people knew that. They thought he was Filipino or something, but he was like one quarter black. But
what I read was that he was part Irish, part Welsh, and claimed to be part Cherokee.
Everybody claims to be part Cherokee.
Him and Elizabeth Warren are like
super yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt would have been back in the day, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, a lot of these people that are cult leaders or even lesser cult leaders who have aspects of being of cult-like things, like some people in Liberty, you know, what they generally do is they take some truths and then they mix in some lies, and it makes the truths, the lies more palatable. Like, you know, in a time when there's a lot of racial unrest, Jim Jones, you know, had a congregation that was 2/3 black, and it was with a lot of white people, the rest of them mostly white and some Asians. And he was like, you know, racism is of the devil. I am not racist. And, you know, it's good to be not racist. And he was doing it in a time when it was dangerous. He actually got run out of Indiana or somewhere where he started for, you know, having blacks and whites in the same church. So he went to San Francisco. And so they always mix some, you know, like, so there's libertarian cult leaders that mix, you know, the truth of liberty with a whole bunch of other crap. So
he attracted the disenfranchised, basically.
Yes,
that population as a whole.
That's what a lot of them do, you know. And the average cult follower is not stupid. There've been studies of them. They're actually usually above average intelligence, disenfranchised in some way, and at critical points in their life, either like late adolescence or you know, middle age crisis age. You know, and Jim Jones actually took in a bunch of older people too, who couldn't really do much work or anything, and people thought that was benevolent. And you know, he's taking care of grandma, and then they all end up dead. And some say the CIA may have had some involvement. So we're going to talk about that when we get back on the Freedom Fiends. Yay.
Yay.
Them's droning words.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com. Freedom Fiends. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps the sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it? Can you feel it?
I can feel the spirit.
Good.
Yep.
You know, I took out my trash the other day, and I took out my trash, and there were like a bunch of tumbleweeds, actual tumbleweeds, in the chain link fence between Intergalactic Prairie Studios and the next ranch over, the next house over. So I did something that like I never had to do when I lived in California, and that was in San Francisco, and that was pick up a bunch of tumbleweeds and put them in my trash. Isn't that kind of weird?
It's weird.
Do you guys have to pick up tumbleweeds and put them in your trash?
No.
You probably have to pick up skunks and alligators and put them in your trash, huh?
Well, I live in an apartment, so they take all they take care of all that for me.
So you pay you pay a tumble you pay a tumbleweed fee as right. as part of your rent.
Pretty much.
I don't know, man. It's just something pretty fun to me still after 5 years of living in Wyoming about having to pick up tumbleweeds and put them in my trash. They have prickers, man. They, you got to use gloves to do it. So
do you actually see the tumbleweeds blowing across the way?
I've seen one that's like 4 feet in diameter rolling down the street in front of my house.
Oh my gosh.
In town. This is in town. And they grow in the alley behind the house. But yeah, man, they're everywhere. And you know, they're actually imported from Russia. They came, the seeds came over in, it was a commie plot. No, it was before it was before Russia was communist. It was, yeah, it was a czarist plot. Let's say that. It came over in grain, like oats imported from Russia.
So they just grow like that? The tumbleweeds do? Wow.
They're just it's big weird. Prickly bushes, but
and they, then they blow around to spread their seed kind of thing.
Yeah. Basically they have really they don't have very deep roots. So when they die and they kind of stay stiff and keep their roundish shape. And they very easily like become dislodged from the dirt in the wind. And then they just blow until they stick to a fence or something. Yep. And they bring the seeds with them. So that's got nothing to do with the CIA and them possibly being behind Jim Jones and the Jonestown cult. So what do you guys got?
So it looks Wikipedia has a little bit of a page on this. So Jonestown conspiracy theory is a conspiracy theory about Jonestown and the Jonestown massacre, with many proponents of the conspiracy theory contending the outside forces were somehow involved in what occurred at the commune, including the massacre. So this kind of says that a lot of these people were maybe victims of a project using mind control. It references Project MK Ultra, which was a CIA project.
Isn't that what your parents named you after? MK Lords?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, MK Ultra is best known for the CIA giving LSD to unwitting soldiers and civilians and some of them freaking out and one of them jumping out a window and dying. But it was a lot more than just LSD. It was the CIA's mind control division. And it involved everything from, you know, LSD to other drugs, to poisons, to toxins, to subliminal messages in television and movies, to, just, you know, the way things are stacked in a grocery store to see if people can be forced to, you know, buy one thing over another. Anything that would enable people to do mind control. You know, actually, have you ever heard that Adam Kokesh worked in the PsyOps division of the Marines?
I never heard that.
I never heard that either.
I've heard that accusation. I don't know if it's true or not, but
yeah. So basically for Jim Jones, what is being alleged is that he was kind of part of this whole CIA thing, or that he was, or he learned his methods through the CIA, or
well, like what? Most conspiracy theories, there are many branches on this particular tumbleweed. But I've heard differing ones of, you know, that he was a CIA plant, or that he was a manipulator who was manipulated with his knowledge or without his knowledge by the CIA, or that they had nothing to do with that. But they can't, they planted people in there, got people on the inside who basically murdered everybody and made it look like Jim Jones did it. But I don't know. There's recordings supposedly of Jim Jones administering the things. I've heard those tapes. Those could be faked. He had a pretty fakeable voice. You know, it was kind of a
very phony voice.
It's a very phony sounding voice. Yeah. He kind of sounded like a parody of a Southern preacher. I don't think he was even Southern and he had a Southern accent.
Yeah.
It
one
was
of the
very
things
put on.
Yeah, one of the things that I read that was kind of interesting and in some way could be connected conspiratorially with what we just discussed has to do with Congressman Ryan, the congressman that was shot there in Guyana, you know, trying to, you know, figure out what was going on down there and possibly rescue people that wanted to be rescued. And he was actually a vocal critic of the lack of congressional oversight of the CIA.
We'll be back.
Yeah.
Jim Jones is from Indiana. He wasn't a Southern. He was not a son of the South.
No.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defooed yet. Because if we don't laugh, the status win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience drop blood pressure or laughter last longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Agricultural commune choir. Oh, that sounds horrible. We are not a commune. We are not communists. We like to keep our stuff. We don't like to have to share it with everybody.
Yeah.
But Jim Jones was a Marxist, and Jim Jones murdered a bunch of people. And some say the government may have been involved. I don't want to, I'm not going to give credence to this theory. I will mention that this theory exists, that the CIA had something to do with the murders and a few suicides at Guyana, at Jonestown. And a lot of people don't know what really happened. You know, they know something happened. They think it was a mass suicide. It was actually a mass murder. Very few people wanted to kill themselves. Some did. Some were so brainwashed they did. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Jim Jones and his minions passed out purple-flavored drink with poison in it. And most people didn't want to drink it. Were forced to drink it or were injected with it or were shot. Jones was found dead with a gunshot wound, single gunshot wound to the head. They don't really know if it was suicide or homicide. There were only like 8 autopsies done out of 900 and some bodies. The bodies didn't get back to the U.S. for about a week. It was a tropical climate. The bodies were decomposing. And there was a congressman, a Democratic congressman named Leo Ryan, who went down there. I am not a fan of government men. I am not a fan of Democrats, especially. Mm-hmm. I got to say, though, I think Congressman Leo Ryan had a lot more guts than most politicians to go down there.
Yeah, that wasn't the only thing he did, too. Like there was he took a job when he was an assemblyman in California. He took a job as a substitute school teacher to investigate and document conditions in the area of the Watts riots.
He
and
went then undercover he also as a teacher, you mean?
Yeah, he did that just so he could, like, you know, check things out and see what was going on. And then he investigated the conditions of California prisons by being held as an inmate under a pseudonym in Folsom Prison.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, he did some brave things. Yeah. You know, I mean, he actually got in there and did stuff.
And he wasn't really known for that or isn't remembered for that.
Yeah.
Whereas, who's the perennial third-party candidate who was the consumer?
Nader.
Ralph Nader. Yeah. Ralph Nader is thought of as a friend of the little guy and protector of the innocent. But Ralph Nader was good friends with Jim Jones. Mm-hmm. And there were people in the People's Temple in San Francisco who wanted to leave and couldn't. And they slipped a note to Ralph Nader because they thought he was a friend of the little guy. And Ralph Nader went to Jim Jones and narked these people out. Jim Jones was friends with a bunch of San Francisco politicians. He was mm-hmm. friends with Jerry Brown, who was the governor then and is the governor now. He was friends with Moscone, who there is a giant convention center named after in San Francisco.
He was the mayor of San Francisco,
yeah,
right?
And he was friends with Harvey Milk, who was shot, I believe, along with Moscone by some crazed lunatic who went into City Hall and shot him on the toilet or shot him in the bathroom. You know, people that are like remembered as heroes, you know, Milk and Moscone, were good friends with Jim Jones, and they liked him because he was mm-hmm. able to motivate, you know, 10 to 15,000 people with one, you know, a couple phone calls.
Yeah.
Because he had people wrapped around, you know, I mean, they were willing to die for him. They were certainly or willing to like go to the middle of the jungle and cut off with all their families. They were certainly willing to go to a voting booth for him.
Yeah. Well, and he even did a test early on. There's a really good documentary out there. If you just Google it, it's on YouTube. It's one of the first ones that pops up. And this woman is talking about one of the early rituals they did involving Kool-Aid. And he basically had his inner circle kind of group come up, about 8 or so people.
Yeah, drills.
Drink, It was drills. And yeah. So he'd have them drink it and then he'd say, that was poison. You're all going to die, to test them, basically,
yeah.
to
test
their loyalty. And then it wouldn't be poison. They would start freaking out, or they would they would just be like, okay, this is happening. And then he would be like, never mind. And there wasn't poison in there, but it was to test their loyalty. And so a few people quit the cult then because they were like, okay, this is getting a bit weird.
Yeah.
Did this happen in Guyana or did it happen in San Francisco?
This is in San Francisco. This is before they went down to Guyana. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He called them White Knights, not K-N-I-G-H-T, but N-I-G-H-T. And he would call everybody over loudspeakers and make them show up and do various things or preach
in the middle
them.
At any time, day or night.
Yeah.
And one other thing I read was that he would announce news brought or, you know, basically read the news over the loudspeaker, like at any time, day or night. And and so, you know, it's tantamount to torture, basically, what he did to these people.
See, that's because
it wore down their resolve. It wore down their resolve. They heard his voice every day, 24 hours of the day. It was just always there in the background. No other news sources either. Right. They had access to no other news.
Yeah. See, it's because he didn't have his own radio show. All those people would still be alive. I just, you know,
I need a podcast.
I need to talk to massive amounts of people and have them hear my thoughts, but I don't mind if they turn it off. But I like doing it at night too, because I think a lot of people fall asleep listening to us on the nighttime show and they get brainwashed in their sleep. I make a lot of jokes about cults. Like, I'm running a cult. I'm so not running a cult.
That's what all the cultists say.
Although I did get you guys on very short notice to do this show today.
True. Is this kind of like the if Hitler had been allowed to be an artist kind of
scenario?
Like if people just
would have liked his art.
If he'd sold a couple paintings, it was pretty good. Yeah. And I'm not saying that if I didn't have a radio show, I would not be running a death cult. I would probably be standing on a street corner with a bullhorn, getting arrested for using a bullhorn without a permit.
There you go.
Yeah, I'd be standing on a street corner screaming at passersby. So you were in a cult, weren't you, MK?
So let's segue into this, because it's one of those things. So like the term cult, I try to be really careful with it because it's a very sensitive topic and, you know, it really can happen to anyone. So it almost happened to me when I was younger. I was probably like 19, 20 years old and I was going to these poetry readings. I was big into spoken word poetry.
It's a gateway drug
to cults. Watch out. So I did a lot of like kind of political poetry. I was more on the left side of things. I was leaning more towards libertarianism, but I was like still, you know, kind of pretty socialistic. So this poet started coming and his poetry was really good. I ended up becoming friends with him and his girlfriend. And he would do these Sunday night political education classes where we'd watch documentaries for hours, similar to the Black Power mixtape. Oh, you know, and then we'd have these hours.
For those who don't know, Black Power Mixtape is a movie that all three of us watched this week, right?
Yes.
Because the cult leader assigned it.
Yes.
I suggested that you guys watch it, and we watched
it. Hours-long discussion on
it. I think of you as kind of an employer, not so much a cult leader.
An employer that doesn't pay you? That's a cult leader, Diana.
He hasn't started asking for donations from us yet.
No, so. But actually Chandler sent me $5 and I was like, Chandler's probably, you know, like he's a single dad. And I'm like, dude, no, I didn't send it back, but I sent him some equipment as a gift that was worth about $250. So,
aww.
Yeah. So I don't want the hosts making donations. I don't need donations. I like donations. And they go into the show, and I probably break even and then make about 30 cents an hour for all the work I put into this show. But I would do this even if I didn't make money. And my stance on donations is far different from some of the culty type libertarian people that go on and give heart-wrenching, almost tearful videos frequently saying, if you want philosophy to survive, you must send me money. Yeah, I'm not that guy.
Please stay away from high def people.
Oh man, that new high def video by that guy. Yeah, you know, but you know, I mean, wouldn't it have been great if we could have seen into the actual pores on the nose of Plato?
Yes. Oh my God.
All right.
I could die happy.
So anyway, you're in a cult, and we're gonna go around the room and give the cult leader is saying that we're gonna go around the room and admit embarrassing things that we did. So you know we're not making fun of you because you were in a cult.
I
voted for Nancy Pelosi and I was a gun grabber and I'm ashamed of that, but I'm making amends by doing this show every day. How about you, Diana, real quick?
Oh, I had a McCain thing in my yard.
I had a McCain thing.
I know.
You had a thing with McCain. You had a thing with McCain. Ew.
Like I said, look, I swung from far left to pretty far right and didn't feel good about it.
I know MK's itching to lay it all on the table here. I will say, this is kind of funny, though. I was in this band called Bomb, and in the mid-80s to early 90s, the drummer in that band in the early 80s was in a band in San Francisco called People's Temple. It was a punk rock band. They didn't like People's Temple. It was a joke, and it was like, I just kind of miss that kind of punk rock crassness that's... I mean, that was too soon. That was like, you know.
Yeah, it was four, too soon.
It was like four.
Clearly
like,
didn't have respect
this
for
this is like
too
1982.
Soon.
This is like, you know. Yeah, and that band morphed into the band Fifth Column, another band with a commie name that was not commie. It was just kind of being crass. And Fifth Column, if you want to hear them with the drummer from Bomb, is on that compilation record, that triple record from Alternative Tentacles. I think it's called Not So Quiet on the Western Front. Another weird commie reference. Yeah, I guess commie stuff was funny in punk rock because, you know, I was kind of commie when I was a teenager, and it was because my dad was a capitalist and I wanted, you know, I was rebelling and I was like, if I put on a Mao hat, I didn't even read any communist literature. I just was like, except for Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman, which, oh, keep that one away from 12-year-olds. I read that at 12.
I had to laugh at a friend who is currently pregnant, and she says she can't wait to raise a cute little nonconformist. And I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. Mm. That kid's going to rebel against the nonconformity.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to raise a nonconformist kid, your kid will probably grow up to be a civil rights attorney that fighting for things you don't believe in. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I got nothing against the ACLU just because they don't take gun cases. They took a gun case once, but it was the thing they were fighting was that it was an illegal search. So yeah, they like some civil rights.
Okay. I want to hear MK's story.
Well, we're almost to the break here. So let's have her have a whole segment for this. It could happen to you. It could happen to your children. Mamas, don't let your babies go to poetry readings. Yeah.
I've been trying to think if I've ever been somewhat brainwashed. I could probably think of a couple of times.
Libertarianism?
No, not really so much that.
We'll be back when MK Lourdes will talk about being in the inner circle of the Black Power movement.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at trueshibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. Trueshibes.com.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
The devil is us. And that's the lyrics to that song. And it's not a Satan worshiping song. It's that's actually the only political song we did. It's about going to war, about America going to war and not caring about who they're killing. All right, so that was The Devil Is Us by the band Bomb, going all the way back to 1991, the end of the Berlin Wall, thereabouts. And MK, tell us about your experiences with the Black Power movement. You are, for those who don't have the cam feed on, MK is really white and kind of hippie.
So yeah, so I was white and kind of hippie. I had dreadlocks and wore like dashiki dresses at the time, and I went through a lot of weird stages. I went through a punk stage first, and then I did the hippie thing for a while. So this is like my hippie like poetry reading phase. So I become acquainted with this poet and his girlfriend, and me and my husband, we all start hanging out, and he decides to start these political education classes, and it's with a group of a lot of other younger poets my age. I was like 19 or so at the time. So yeah, we'd hang out like every Sunday, watch these documentaries, and some of them were really good. I gotta say, I learned a whole lot about the Black Power movement, a lot of the individuals in it. I have, you know, a lot of respect for people like Stokely Carmichael and Bobby Seale and a lot of the other Panthers, and it's really interesting, and I learned a whole lot.
Stokely wasn't a Panther, was he? No, pre-Panther?
He was involved in SNCC, who ended up in SNCC, who ended up trying to form a coalition with the Black Panthers, but then he was kind of derailed from that by the CIA.
Yeah, and Stokely Carmichael, the first guy to ever be accused of being an FBI COINTELPRO agent, and he was accused of that by the FBI. There you go.
Well, actually, they were so effective at putting misinformation out there that he was accused by Huey P. Newton of the Black Panthers.
Yeah.
And then he went into exile after that. So they really did a good job of splintering the Black Power movement in a lot of ways by infiltration. So I learned a lot about that. And they do this when movements start being really effective.
And I got to say, for anybody listening who's like, what are these people talking about? The thing that's called the New Black Panthers, those idiots that are trying to keep people from vote, white people from voting, those people have nothing to do with the original Black Panthers. And the original Black Panthers, the ones that are still around, have thrown those people under the bus.
Yeah.
They're not the same people. And the original Black Panthers were, they had issues. They kind of collectivized all white people, but they were first and foremost a self-defense organization in a time when black people were just being murdered by the cops left and right.
Right.
And so I learned a lot about that, and I had a lot of really insightful discussions about, you know, violent versus nonviolent tactics. And I got very close to these people, and the meetings were very long, and I would find myself kind of getting worn down and overwhelmed with a lot of the topics. And I think a lot of other people were pretty susceptible to that too. I mean, poets and writers, you know, they tend to be kind of sensitive people, especially about social issues.
Sensitive.
So, you know, it was kind of ripe. Yeah. So, like, you know, we were all pretty young people. Some of the, you know, other kids were younger than I was. We were kind of all in college and stuff, too. So we were already learning a lot of, you know, critical theory, stuff like that. So so he was a very charismatic leader. He was very but hypocritical, too, in the ways that kind of leaders are. And just it got very tense. He was not a fan of black people or white people. He was very much a black nationalist. He viewed white people as kind of inherently evil. And, you know, things like white privilege and checking your privilege was a topic that was frequently discussed and we frequently did it. We checked our privilege as white people. You know, no, seriously, this is why, like, I've written on this topic and why I'm so adamantly against libertarians trying to bring this bad philosophy into it, because it's completely racist and sexist on so many levels. So we ended up having a bit of a falling out at this thing called the Peace Festival, ironically.
Was there a fist fight at the Peace Festival?
No, but it was you know, pretty kind of loud disagreement between you know, my husband and this kind of group leader guy. And you know, it was a bummer. You know, this person, I don't know if he was someone who was kind of manipulated and was able to manipulate other people well, but he was very charismatic, very smart, you know, even very flattering too. Something that he would do was he would flatter you. He'd be like, well, you guys are the good white people. You know, I don't really hate you guys, but he would talk smack about like every other white, like making, and I had dreadlocks and wore dashikis, because I mean, I was such a, you know, weird little hippie at the time. And I like wouldn't, you know, he's talking about other people like me basically to my face. So you could only imagine what he was probably saying about us. I mean, he didn't believe black people could be racist. He believed in the critical race theory idea that racism equals power plus prejudice. So very, very strange topic.
All right. We'll be back soon for hour two of MK Lord's Journey into Darkness.
Oh, that's kind of racist.
That's kind of what?
That's kind of racist.
Racist.
I don't know. I don't think so.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibBear 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. This is I'm Michael Dean, and I'm located at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, and I'm talking over the inner tubes with Diana Kyler and MK Lords. Are you both there? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But I am safe.
MK?
I'm safe and have not been contacted by the government.
Excellent. So we are talking about white privilege. For those who don't know, how would you define the ridiculous concept of white privilege, MK? Being a white woman.
Its origins come from this paper by Peggy McIntosh, I believe that's her name. It's White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack is the name of the paper. And it makes the argument that white people are excessively more privileged in society and that they start the race a few steps ahead of everyone else. And because of that, they have more potential to succeed, whereas other people of other races are held down and have to face, you know, more hurdles in life. They're more targeted by the police and, you know, racism, things like that. So it's disproportionately harder for them to succeed. So one of the things that you should do is, if you're a white person, you should check your privilege. You should, you know, be aware that your white skin grants you certain privileges that other people with different colored skin do not have. Now, there's a lot of problems with this theory because, well, really the biggest problem is privilege is contextual. So privilege relies a lot on the environment that you're in, and it changes. Your privilege changes depending on your environment, too. It's not always better for you to be white skin privileged in certain areas, just as it's, you know, people with black skin suffer different problems, too. And it's very reductionist. It's what it does is it lumps people into categories, and what it does is it pits races against each other, yeah, too. And it's, yeah, very divisive. And this, mm-hmm, is something that leftists use a lot to divide people, right, into categories. You see this a lot in gender identity politics, things like that. So it's very, very divisive and I think very destructive. And what it does is I think it hurts people of color too, because, mm-hmm, they're internalizing that they are inferior to,
right,
white people.
Yeah,
and I think that's
exactly
extremely damaging. That's something that the civil rights movement fought hard against, was a lot of these biases against people with darker, mm-hmm, skin color, and saying, you know, we're not inferior to white people. You know, mm-hmm, we deserve the same rights. So we deserve this equal treatment. And for academics to now, decades later, come out and start putting them back into these categories seems very racist too. Me.
I don't, yeah, like academics. I don't like academics, yeah, generally. And, you know, liberals would say that means I don't like knowledge or education. But that's kind of like saying if you don't like Obamacare, you're against healthcare. With, you know, that's one thing the government and the, I would say the ruling class, which largely includes the academics, or at least they're the steering committee of it, does all the time, is conflates, mm-hmm, one thing with another. You know, if you're against Obamacare, it means you want babies to starve and, you know, die of diseases, which is not true. Healthcare is not the same as health insurance, and being forced to buy crappy health insurance is not the same as healthcare. And I'm, mm-hmm, actually in this weird socioeconomic bracket where I don't make enough money to afford health insurance, but I make too much money to get any subsidy from the state or the federal government for my Obamacare that I'm forced to get. So basically what I'm going to have to do is go without health insurance and pay $600 a year.
Yeah, same here. We're in
$600 a year is the fine for not getting.
Yeah, for
okay,
the first
I thought it was
year.
$2,000 a year.
No,
or
I think it's $600.
Okay. Well, it's 1% of your income, or okay. It's the first year, I believe, is actually closer to $900. It's 900 or 1%, I think, whichever is greater. Or no, I'm sorry, it's 90 the first year, and then but it's up to. It's 1%, which is higher, which could be so anywhere from 90 to maybe, you know, $600, $700, $800.
Because
so.
that's going to be me starting the first of the year.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to figure out something.
Yeah,
so I'll no longer be on my excess insurance.
My experience
poor for government health care.
My experience with white privilege, and I grew up, you know, not wealthy at all. I grew up never went without a meal, but you know, wore a lot of secondhand clothes. But my real experience with white privilege was dating a black girl in a black ghetto in San Francisco. That was an interesting experience. Kids, don't try this at home.
So how were you perceived
I was
in that
threatened.
Environment?
I was verbally threatened every time I walked down the street holding hands with her. Yeah.
Yeah. And by who?
By black men sitting on the porch selling crack.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yep.
You weren't oppressing them with your privilege?
I think they thought I was.
Yeah, just by being there.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
This is why context is important. But yeah, so the white privilege thing, it's, you know, I kind of grew up in a situation, I had a working class family, you know, not super wealthy. I wasn't privileged like a lot of my peers were, you know, I had to pay for a lot of my own stuff as soon as I got a job, you know, things like that. And I think they were really good lessons that I learned, but in no ways did I feel that my skin color put me so much further ahead of everyone. Now, but I did get indoctrinated into the kind of white guilt thing through mm-hmm. school yeah. and through college and stuff like that. So at the time that I had found myself, you know, nearly in this cult, I was already kind of indoctrinated with a lot of these ideas. And I really believed I had internalized hatred, you know, on my own skin color. And I think a breaking point kind of came when we were sitting at it was one of these discussions we were having, and it had gotten really intense. And one of my good friends, a really excellent poet, this white guy, and he basically says, he's like, I feel ashamed for being white. And like, it just struck a chord with me in that, like, it felt wrong. It felt like horrible that, like, he was hating his skin color, which is Malcolm X is famous for saying, who taught you to hate yourself?
Yeah.
In regards to black people, you know, these prominent civil rights leaders were speaking against the exact opposite thing. They were saying, you know, it's not right to hate yourself based on your skin color. Society has taught you to hate your black skin, and the power structure has taught you to hate your black skin.
And you were being taught to hate your white skin.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. They think that if they can reverse the hatred, that somehow ends institutionalized racism and oppression. And it doesn't.
And no.
I want to talk.
No, it just oppresses other people.
I want to talk about some interesting conspiracy theories. Now, this black power leader with, you said, kind of cult-like leanings. What was his name again?
His name was Q.
Q? Is he still around?
Yes. Yeah, he's still in Pensacola.
All right. He had an interesting theory, conspiracy theory, that I've never heard that I kind of want to explore. I it doesn't sound impossible to me. I will never back a conspiracy theory 100%, but I will explore any of them. What was mm-hmm. his theory?
No, he had a couple, and this was, I found out a lot about the conspiracy theory side of things, and it does make sense when you look at the history of government infiltration in Black Power movement. So there's a reason there's a lot of paranoia in the Black Power movement even today. So one of the theories was that in the 80s, and similar to this, the other documentary we watched went into this in the 70s with heroin, but with crack, the crack mm-hmm. epidemic in the 80s, a lot of black people believe that it was the government who were flooding the streets with crack.
That's a really common conspiracy theory, and it's actually, you know, there's a journalist with a lot of respect who did a series of articles on that was a possibility. I mean, that's the really common one. That's even in Boys in the Hood, you know, where the kind of wise old black guy takes the young bucks out and has them look at some sign and says, I can't read that. Can you read it? And then they talk about, you know, How do you think the crack gets into this neighborhood? You know, the black men don't own airplanes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Rick Ross has spoken on this. Are you talking about the other conspiracy theory then?
About MLK.
Okay, so yes, yeah, so we watched this. One of the documentaries we watched was a conspiracy theory about Jesse Jackson's conspiring to have MLK, Martin Luther King Jr., assassinated, along with Reverend, oh my goodness, his name is escaping me right now. But basically, the conspiracy goes something like Jesse Jackson was wearing different clothing than the people who were supposed to be targets, who were supposed to have been shot at, who were wearing ties, like so Martin Luther King Jr., the other reverend who got shot, and that he had worked with the shooters so that they would assassinate Martin Luther King Jr. so that maybe Jesse Jackson could rise to prominence or something like that. And what he mm-hmm. did is, I don't know about this. You know, I don't really
I've heard
know
that. I've heard the same thing before.
I've heard this. I don't know how true it is, but some things that were kind of interesting was Jesse Jackson did play up a lot that he was right by Martin's side. And according to eyewitness reports, is he actually kind of came in later. He wasn't really right there. Like Martin Luther King Jr. didn't die in Jesse Jackson's arms.
Well, there's a picture.
Really happened.
There's a really famous picture from Life magazine of Jesse Jackson and two other guys pointing up to where they said the gunshot came from. That looks kind of staged. You know, it could have been 15 minutes later. And I guess there would be cameras there. You know, there were probably cameras following MLK everywhere. But it does look kind of staged. So you're saying that, like, the theory is that Jesse Jackson wore, you know, don't shoot the guy with the blue hat or something like that. Like, he wore something to identify to not be shot.
Yeah, something along those lines. And about the different power plays he was trying to make in the civil rights movement, too. Other people thought he was a self-promoter. They viewed him as kind of parasitic. They viewed him as kind of an annoyance, too.
Yeah. He is.
Some people even said that Martin didn't like Jesse because he found him annoying. He found him too overbearing. Yeah. You know, it's like kind of they weren't as close, allegedly, according to this documentary anyway, they weren't as close as Jesse Jackson would have you believe.
And MLK was,
I can't speak to that.
MLK was very charismatic, but he didn't really like love the spotlight. You know, he wasn't a power driver the way that Jesse Jackson was.
Yeah.
The FBI, was it the FBI or the CIA? It came out later through a FOIA request that I think it was the FBI was trying to blackmail MLK into committing suicide.
Yes.
You know about that?
Yeah, that is actually true.
He had a mistress and they knew about it and they were going to expose him and they basically told him to put his gun in his mouth and pull the trigger. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
That's fact. And he also, he was a gun guy. I mean, he was, you know, in threat of being killed all the time. And he applied mm-hmm. for a concealed carry permit and got turned down. Not that that would have helped him from a rifle shot from a distance,
right.
This was after they burned his house down in Birmingham.
Yeah.
That he applied for this permit and they still denied him.
Yeah. I mean, and they base those on need. Like, what more need do you need for self-defense than people burn down your house and tried to kill you, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So when we get back, we're going to talk about what the civil rights movement got right, what the black power movement got right, what the yippies got right, and what they all got terribly wrong. And a lot of what they got wrong is the same things Jim Jones got wrong. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends.
Arms.
Arms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound.
Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
So, are you dancing?
Yeah.
Cool, man. Cool. This is Michael Dean talking to MK Lords and talking to Diana Kyler, and we're talking about what the '60s got right and what they got wrong. Anybody want to start? I have theories.
I think that the problems that they highlighted, they had right. You know, everything that they said that were issues, they were issues. I mean, there were definite problems with racism and, you know, classism and, you know, just, I mean, I think that, you know, when I listen to these documentaries and even listening to Jim Jones, I mean, he had many salient points, but, you know, it was just, then they just kind of all got into the crazy, you know, in terms of how to deal with it.
I think the biggest thing that all those groups did wrong, Jim Jones, other than being a lunatic who just basically seemed to want to destroy people, you know, and the Black Power movement and, you know, the Yippies, which was kind of the white radical movement, other than advocating for violence, which I understand, I don't condone it, but I understand it. I mean, basically, you know, every Tea Party member who's polishing his bayonet and watching Fox News and saying, we're getting to a time when there's a line in the sand and we're going to have American Revolution too. You know, I understand that guy. I understand why he thinks that way. That's exactly the kind of thought that was going through the heads of the Yippies and the Black Panthers. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the black voting thing in the South where they tried to sign up voters, basically they people got killed. People got jailed. People got beat up. To try to register black voters in the South to have some participation in, you know, this stupid thing of the government and the voting. And they got the numbers to do it. And LBJ, the Democrat president, who, you know, there's theories that he became president by helping have somebody killed, you know, and that guy was a warmonger. He loved Vietnam. And that guy basically, you know, there's tapes that have come out that the FBI made of him like saying, I ain't going to let them N-words vote no matter how many people they get signed up. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he was,
yeah,
he didn't want equality at all. And what happened was around that time, you know, black voters got shut out of the process, even though they had the numbers. And some of them said, let's keep working within the system for 40 more years, you know, which led to Obama. And Obama is he's a friend of the banksters. You know, he's not a friend of the little guy. But he's basically like George Bush, who's a little more eloquent and mm-hmm. doesn't mind gay marriage. So that's has a better tan. Yeah. So and then there were the people who said we tried working within the system. It didn't work. It's time to march in the street with guns. You know, it was mm-hmm. I mean, in a way, the Black Panthers were kind of like, you know, the extreme right of the Tea Party for the left.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
and you had people like Malcolm X making extremely convincing arguments that working in the system was completely futile and useless mm-hmm. and that you had to work outside of it. And Nation of Islam, in that same vein, was very pro self-defense, pro guns,
pro education, pro homeschooling, pro running their own schools. You know,
well, that's what was really subversive about the Panthers is they were building their own communities by educating the children, by feeding the children. That's mm-hmm. where the free lunch program.
Yeah, the
program the public school does.
Free breakfast.
They took it from the Black Panthers, basically. But they were building up their communities, and that's really threatening.
Yeah.
When you're building up a community of conscious people who are who have a good understanding of how things work, and I mean that's a big reason why they were targeted and with COINTELPRO.
Yeah, they took it upon themselves to take care of themselves and to take care of each other, you know. And you were talking about LBJ, and as I understand it, and some of the things that I've read, is that his whole thing with the Great Society was to make, you know, the underclass, the underprivileged, in particular, you know, Black people, you know, basically slaves to the government.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. The other problem with all these movements is other than collectivizing, you know, like some of the stuff the Nation of Islam people said just was appalling. It's like the white people are devils, saying things like that. Mm-hmm. I actually went to boarding school near Philly when I was 14 to 18, you know, 78 to 82, with a bunch of Black kids from inner city Philly. And some of them, it was like the first time I met. It's the first time I like met Black people, but it was like suddenly I was living, you know, at this boarding school with a bunch of kids from there. And there were a couple of them that were Nation of Islam, or at least professed that. They might have just been doing it to scare Whitey, but they talked the rap, and, you know, they were telling me that, like, I was the devil. It was really weird. And a couple of them said they knew people from MOVE. Did either of you watch that documentary about MOVE?
Yes. Yeah, I know all about it.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
I haven't seen that.
We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it's scary.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
John Africa.
Here we go. Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends, talking to MK Lawrence and Diana Carler. So the other thing I was going to say about all these 60s movements that they did wrong was they were Marxist, man. Mm-hmm. Jim Jones was a Marxist. And what did you say to MK about Marxists and Jim Jones? It was funny.
So he had the quote from George Santayana above the compound, but it just goes to show you that they can't not even commit genocide on a small scale.
Yeah. Marxist. I mean, yeah.
You don't have to be
Mao or Stalin. Yeah. You get 900 of them together and they all end up dead.
Yeah. Somehow.
Yeah.
Even with the nice rhetoric that he used, which sounded very appealing. If you go back and listen to Jim Jones preaching, I mean, he really sounds like very universalist, very inclusive. Like, yeah, we're going to create this paradise. Right. Like, it sounds like he sells it well.
He said exactly what people wanted to hear.
Going to create this paradise in Chile. I mean, Guyana. Okay, so, you know, I was thinking too about the conspiracy theory that the CIA had something to do with Jim Jones. I was thinking what their reason would be. You know, that was during the Cold War when America was anti-communist in a big way. Maybe they wanted to say, hey, Marxism leads to mass suicide. You know, maybe it was orchestrated, and it's weird. Like, I don't know what point in my lifetime, the United States went from being anti-communist to being like run by communists. It's, you know, I mean, Obama has had like actual people like praising Mao, you know, close to him. So I think it happened before then, though. I think it happened on the inside before then, but yeah. I don't know. So, yeah, like, you know, SDS was Marxist. The Yippies were Marxist. A lot of the hippies had kind of trickled down, watered down, third generation, you know, like, oh, yeah, everything should be shared. See, the thing about Marxism is, like, it appeals to children, and it appeals to people with the mind and with the mind of a child, even if they have a college education, which a lot of people who have a college education still do, but, you know, on the surface, everyone should be fair. People shouldn't starve. Of course that's true. But, you know, when it's basically backed up by a bunch of AK-47s shooting right. the dissidents. Yeah. Do you guys know anything about Burma?
Not a whole lot. Very, I don't. Yeah.
This is another,
yeah,
while I'm handing out homework assignments to my faithful listener, my cult members now. I saw another day. I watched a bunch of documentaries. I had like 5 days off. I never had 5 days off. So I watched a bunch of documentaries last week over the Thanksgiving vacation on Netflix. And I have a bunch more I'm going to watch. There's one called They Call It Myanmar. And it's about Burma. And that country, like most Americans don't know much about it. It is one of the most screwed up countries in the world. It is the second most isolated and second most tyrannical government to live under after North Korea. But like everybody knows about North Korea, but not many people know about Burma. And
yeah,
it's,
because they don't have big bombs or anything like North Korea does. So.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, they have like, you know, the army there has in the past, you know, 20 years, even more recently, has like mowed down peaceful monks with machine guns for like marching in the street, trying to like, you know, with signs that say people should have more rights. You know, mm-hmm. They recently jailed a blogger for 17 years of hard labor for posting a picture of typhoon damage. Like they don't want people outside Burma to know that happens there, you know?
But they also have a tourist, like a big tourist.
Yeah,
industry,
it's like
right?
it's like yeah. North Korea, but with tourism. Like they actually have, you know, people from America and Europe go there and stay in 5-star hotels and get these really controlled tours where they get taken to the Buddhist temple and see all the beautiful things and, you know, go back to their hotel. And they don't even know that, like, outside their hotel, you know, parents are frequently selling their children for $40 in a bag of rice into sex slavery or child soldiering because they can't afford not to, you know. It's a messed up country. And and it's the interesting thing about it too is like, you know, they're communist, but they're one of the few countries left that doesn't have a dear leader. Like nobody knows or cares who the leaders are at any given time. It's basically the military is the ruler, generals run the mm-hmm. country. It's an oligarchy, it's a bunch of people, it's a committee. You know, it's not one dear leader. So it's basically right. like just worship the government. And it's all about unity and it's all about patriotism. And, you know, it's one of the few countries where children are still made to do a national anthem like they are in America. And yeah, check that one out. So back to collectivism and Marxism, which is what's wrong with Burma. And it's what was wrong with the Black Panthers. It was what was wrong with SDS. It's what was wrong with the Yippies. It was what was wrong with the hippies in a more watered down way. And it's why all the great ideas of the 60s basically failed.
And it's unfortunate because you can understand why they held this contrarian position in a lot of ways. If mm-hmm. you perceive the U.S. to be fascist, well, a lot of them believe that the opposite of that was socialist or communist. And right. what they saw, I experienced this under George W. Bush's presidency, was whatever that guy is, I'm the opposite. So I thought it was a Democrat by default, you know, so
that's
a lot
the lie,
of
man. That's the lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird because, like, you know, Democrats like to hide a lot of their history too. The KKK were Democrats. LBJ, who ran the Vietnam War into the ground, or like, you know, kept it going, and loved it and had just a total, like, you know, libido dominandi for killing students and sending them over to die. That guy's a Democrat. Yeah. Democrats mm-hmm. were not peace and love, man.
Yeah. There was only, I think the draft has only occurred under Democrat administrations.
Well, Nixon, got the brilliant idea actually from one of his Chicago school kind of libertarian leaning economists to end the draft.
Yeah.
And it basically killed the activism of the 60s, you know, because most of the draft protesters, once the hippies got involved, didn't really care about ending the draft. They cared about them not being drafted. And right. once they didn't care about ending the war. And really there was a huge anti-war movement before the hippies came in and screwed it up. You know, it was basically a lot of priests and nuns and rabbis mm-hmm. and, you know,
MLK was anti-war.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was another theory I'd never heard until I saw that movie Black Power Mixtape. And it makes sense. Is like, MLK got killed right after he started being strongly outspoken about being anti-war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was some rapper commenting on it, like, you know, They don't care if I pee in the same toilet as the whites. They don't care if I have a turkey sandwich at the right. same lunch counter as the whites. But, you know, you start talking about ending their money train of right, the military exactly. industrial complex, and they get yeah. worried.
I love how he put that.
Yeah. I cleaned it up mm-hmm. for radio.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You well, were talking yeah. about, you were talking about Marxism and how, you know, it Marxism only works if you view it as, you know, from the mind of a child.
Yeah.
But I would disagree. I mean, I would say that, that the ideas of it could work on a very, very small scale and only voluntarily.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it could,
yeah, go ahead.
You know, it's funny because Ian Freeman is always like, you need to come to New Hampshire. You've never been to New Hampshire. And I'm like, I spent like 7 summers in New Hampshire as a kid. And, you know, when I was 9 years old, I went to a hippie commune in New Hampshire where everyone was naked and taking LSD. I've been to New Hampshire, man. And, you know, that worked.
Yeah. I mean, the whole, you know, thinking about, you know, how would an anarchist society work? And, you know, it could be, you know, there could be anarcho-communists or whatever, and there could be anarcho-capitalists. But, you know, as long as the anarcho-communists weren't trying to force the anarcho-capitalists to.
But they always want to. They seem to always want. You know, a lot of like what the U.S. has done with the military industrial complex was under the guise of stopping the spread of communism. And it was all done wrong. It was done with force and it didn't have to be. And it was really done to just fatten the coffers of a bunch of rich old white men. And now it's not just rich old white men. You know, here's what the equality of the 60s has led to. The military industrial complex, and the banksters, the people that are like destroying your lives, killing people in your name and taking all your money, aren't just rich white men anymore. They're also rich black women and everybody else. So that's right. Your equality is you have, you know, other flavors of slave master.
Well, and something that's been kind of being left out of this conversation on the left for a long time is the discussion about class and class relations. And this was very big in the 60s. There was very much a focus on classism, you know, the
it was
rich,
very big
the
in feminism, in early feminism too.
Right, right. Well, because people were economically disadvantaged. In the documentary we watched, you have Stokely Carmichael interviewing his mother, who is saying his father was the very first one to be laid off at his job. He worked 4 weeks right. on, 2 weeks off. He was the first one to be laid off
because he was black.
So right. they were specifically targeted from an economic standpoint yeah. too, and that's very much a form of classism. And now you don't see the left using classism anymore. In fact, you see a lot of attacks on the poor. From the left, it's a very, very much becoming an elitist kind of philosophy. Yeah.
I mean, I guess the homeless.
For example,
you know,
this socialized healthcare. I mean, I'm a poor working class person, and I can't afford healthcare. I couldn't afford healthcare before the Affordable Care Act, and now I definitely can't afford it. And what it's doing is it's crushing that group of people who are just, you know, above that threshold of surviving, but still not, like you mentioned earlier, still not really in the place to be able to afford insurance. And even the penalty is going to be pretty, pretty painful too.
Right.
So it's crushing an entire group of
yeah.
people.
It seems like
who aren't necessarily thriving. I mean, it's not like we're not making millions of dollars in finding all of these tax loopholes to not pay taxes, things like that.
It seems like the people who figured out, you know, the people that are in charge, you know, politically or economically, have basically figured out that something like 85 to 90% of the population of America are useful idiots and can be convinced to rally in the street and vote for things that are completely contrary to their own self-interest, whether it's, you know, poor people being convinced to back Obamacare, or people who like the internet being convinced to back net neutrality, or, you know, the white middle class gun owner watching Fox News being convinced to back the Tea Party. You know, it's all shell games, man.
Interesting thing. I want to just mention the gun rights movement and the NRA. The NRA actually used to be for legislation that would prevent black people from owning guns.
The NRA
it used to be on the total opposite side of what you think the NRA is now.
The NRA
which is
are
associated
into,
with the right.
They're into gun control, man. They're really, really.
They helped pass the very first toughest gun control measures, which specifically targeted black people. And this is something you saw. This is why they started going after the Black Panthers, especially. early in Nation of Islam because they were saying, we're going to defend ourselves. We are going to shoot the cops when they shoot at us.
Well, Reagan also passed gun laws in California because blacks were marching on the courthouse open carrying, you know?
Yeah. And, yeah. Right.
Can't have a bunch of black people with guns now.
He also passed the Brady Act, signed the Brady Act. But, you know, for what it's worth, that was after he got shot next to Brady. So.
Right.
The left completely leaves this out. Yeah.
Completely leaves it out of the conversation.
Wake up, sheeple. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. A collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Keep it up and see what happens. All right. Yeah. Freedom Fiends. All right. It's time for the redemption in the third act here on the Freedom Fiends. So, MK Lords, are you familiar with the works of Amiri Baraka, also known as Leroy Jones?
Leroy Jones.
Really?
I believe so.
Man, he's an OG, like, he's a black rights poet. You should know him if you were in he goes back to, like, you know, before the black, like when the Black Panthers were kids, he was like 20 something and writing edgy poetry. He's in my movie, Hubert Selby Jr., It'll Be Better Tomorrow, because he used to shoot heroin with Hubert Selby back in the late 50s, early 60s. Now, this is kind of funny. I had this woman who knew the guy I was making this movie with come to me and say, you can't put Amiri Baraka in this movie. And I said, why? And she said, because he's anti-Jewish. And I said, what do you mean? And she's like, well, he wrote this poem. Amiri Baraka is the guy who created the conspiracy theory that a bunch of Jews were told to not go to work on 9/11. He wrote a poem. He wrote a poem right after 9/11 called Somebody Blew Up America. And that was part of the crux of the poem. But this lady told me that and was like, the funny thing was, like, Selby's wife, who's Jewish, his widow, said, no, he's an important, Amiri Baraka is an important part of the story. You have to put him in the story. You know, he knew the guy. You can't put him, not put him in because of this. My producer, who was Jewish, said the same thing. And Jerry Stahl, who's, you know, the one of the writers that's interviewed in there that was friends with Selby, said the same thing, and he's Jewish. So, like, it was really weird. It was a really weird, like, political, it was an attempt at political correcting censorship on the movie. It was bizarre, man. So
it's a really good movie, by the way.
Yeah, but you should know who that is if you're into if you were into black power poetry in your ill-spent youth, MK. He's in my movie.
Yeah, I do recall that name now. Yeah, it's I mean, it's
He said some heavy stuff in that book too, in that movie too, like just kind of this random spew that was great. He's like, and he died recently, but he said something like, well, you know, I mean, you go to college and you study, you know, like German philosophy, you know, Italian art, you know, English history, you know, but what do you know about, what do you know about Mexican poetry or Canadian poetry? And I was like, that's true, man. That's kind of a heavy thought. Yeah. What do you know about?
I don't
about
think there is any Canadian poetry, what do you know according
about,
to Christian.
What do you know about Burmese poetry? You know? Yeah. Your boyfriend's a Canucker, huh?
Yeah. They don't really have any kind of literary history. Except for Margaret Atwood. I like her.
Yeah. So, the interesting, Amiri Baraka had an interesting thing happen though. He was the poet laureate of New Jersey, which was an actual like title, you know, it came with a prize and a wreath and a ham or something. I don't know, a plaque and a speech. And, I think he was the second person to ever be the, after, you know, they started it. He was the poet laureate of New Jersey. When he wrote this poem, Somebody Blew Up America, Jewish rights groups, probably the same lady that tried to get me to not put Amiri Baraka in the movie, like hammered away at this governor of New Jersey, who later came out as gay and stepped down in shame for being gay instead of just saying, I'm gay, what about it?
Oh, wow.
He took away Amiri Baraka's laurelship, and then like, Amiri Baraka tried to sue him, and then they found out, like, they checked the state attorneys checked it out and decided the only way they could do it was to dissolve the post of poet laureate of New Jersey, and they did that.
Wow.
Just so he wouldn't go,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. My theory is they'll reinstate it in a few years and give it to Bruce Springsteen or something. So I don't think we have time to talk about
Bon Jovi.
About Move, but we talked about Move the other night, so we don't really need to. Yeah, Bon Jovi. So we got about 25 seconds here. Anyone want to give a thrilling conclusion? Don't be Marxist or collectivist.
Yeah, don't just, you know, follow yourself. Yeah, you know, man, don't
leaders.
Don't look to a great man. You know, don't, you know.
The people who get to the point of being a great man are usually the ones with the biggest problems.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, trust yourself. You know, like, yeah,
don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Yep, there you go. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Worms.
Thanks, Megan. Worms. Thanks, Diana.
Thanks.
It's been a great show. And tomorrow we'll have... Who do we got tomorrow? We got Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. Worms.